Okay, we're off. So that's what I normally start off. We're off. So we're off. We've got Andy and Phil here. Is that right?
Yep. Yes.
Okay. You go.
I shall start. What would you like to talk about?
That's the first question everybody asks.
Yeah.
Anything you want.
It's just any subject, any topic at all. So since what you just mentioned about Facebook, for instance, and stuff like that, what you're doing, personal life, any interests, just have a conversation about.
Well, I feel like we should talk about the Charity Shield, or the Community Shield.
Okay. Name lost me.
did you realise you were in a van full of non-football fans?
I didn't, no, so I thought, exactly, well, yeah, you know, yeah. three blokes in a van, I thought, start with football.
Well, there's a good thought. Why did you thought that three blokes. We would all be football fans?
Because Sheffield is a little bit like Liverpool. You're either a Blade or you're
the owl.
Yeah. From Doncaster. I don't know that. I don't. So when I was starting to do a bit of my business posting, I was thinking, should I, you know, when I come into Sheffield, the easiest way would be to start talking about the football clubs. Because then you're not talking about mortgages, because let's be honest, talking about financial services is boring. So we're talking about, but then I thought, well, if I start talking about the Blades and how, you know, they're going to do quite well in the Premiership or how they're not, then I'm going to alienate the Wednesday fans.
Yeah.
But if I start talking about the Wednesday fans, I'm going to alienate the United fans. So I just went with Doncaster. Because the majority of people in Doncaster support Leeds. So.
How bizarre.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Okay, so where are you from then? Are you from Doncaster?
So I'm from Doncaster originally, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do you live in Sheffield now?
Nope, still live in Doncaster with my grandmother.
Oh, right.
So.
Yeah. So, after all that, are you a football fan then?
I am a football fan, yeah.
Supporter of?
I support Liverpool.
Okay, so it's getting more bizarre by the minute.
It is, yeah.
Any particular reason, or just...
When I was younger, I was taken to a few grounds, and the pressure was off. It was a case of, you know, go to the grounds, enjoy the atmosphere, enjoy the game, and then start choosing a team. At one point I was going to become a Derby County fan, because Derby County probably one of the loudest teams in the Championship.
Okay.
But we're talking 20 years ago now. But I went to Anfield and Michael Owen was playing in a pre-season friendly against Lazio. Michael Owen was just a new kid on the block at that time. But the reason I supported them was You'll Never Walk Alone. I was in the Kop, 10-year-old, and that played. And it was just, wow. Pre-season friendly. I went to United and it was very quiet. I went to Stamford Bridge and had my prawn sandwich. but didn't sing any songs.
So it was the camaraderie, the community spirit stuff then, and the rousing
renditions of You'll Never Walk Alone in a pre-season friendly.
The passion was there despite the fact that it was just a friendly, or
I think that's the thing with Liverpool. It's a case of they get, you know, unfortunately they get a bit of bad press, but their fans and the games are, you know, they're very passionate. They know the game. They're very passionate fans. Mm. The singing is there, and I'm always sort of curious when I go to games, because I was at the Doncaster Rovers game on Saturday, and there was a player that divided opinion. He's a new signing for the Rovers, and I thought he was terrible. But there was people around me that was thinking he was great, and I was thinking, he's giving the ball away. He's a midfielder. He's giving the ball away. He's not holding. It's not sticking. He's not passing correct. He's not linking up play at all. But everybody around me was thinking, yeah, he's brilliant. He's brilliant. Look at his hair. He's great. I was like, well, his hair's nice, but he's terrible. He was a bit like Elas Diouf from Liverpool. He was an absolute terrible human being, but his hair was nice. So, but there was no singing.
Right.
There was a little bit. But so it's a case of should the team on the pitch spring into action to get the fans singing, or should the fans sing to increase the action? And that's Liverpool on a Champions League night. The fans so just...
Is that way? I'm not a football fan, but I do keep abreast of what's happening, or try to. So when Barcelona came over last year...
Yeah,
before the Champions League semi-final or something, was it?
Yes.
With Liverpool being thrashed, and they've been beaten 3-0 or something?
Yes, 3-0 in the Camp now.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to watch the game because I just thought, this is... I'm the kind of person, I turned East Ham Bull off in 2005. I turned it off at half-time because I thought, I can't watch this team get destroyed, and they're 3-0 down. And on the 60th minute, I turned it back on just to see whether or not it was 5, 6, 7, and it was 3-3. So I was a bit like, well, okay, actually.
Perhaps I should have watched that.
Perhaps I should have watched that. Yeah. But yeah, no, I eventually watched the Barcelona game, the second leg, and when the second goal went in, I thought, we might just... But I couldn't see Barcelona not scoring at Anfield.
Yeah.
With the players that they've got, Messi, Suarez, Rakitic, Coutinho, I thought they would score.
Yeah.
Like most of us did. And when they didn't, and Divock Origi got the fourth, it was a bit like... My gran actually asked me to quieten down a little bit because I was in the back room. She was in the living room watching Emmerdale or whatever, and I was just.
But this is what I find quite intriguing, because when you've got teams like that, you know, you've mentioned these world class players,
yeah,
who were intimidated, I assume, by the atmosphere that was Anfield. Is that what?
Yeah.
Brought it about. I mean, they literally lifted the team beyond football or whatever.
Yeah, there's a cliche in football that the cop is the 12th man.
Yeah.
And that's, they use it as a positive for Anfield, and they say the 12th man will, you know, back in the day when Kenny Dalglish and Ian Rush were playing, they would literally suck the ball into the net with the passion that they were showing and the loudness. And yeah, I think it is a case of teams come, it's that loud. I think until recently, I think another team beat us, but I can't remember which. But the Liverpool versus Borussia Dortmund Europa League game 3 years ago broke the record for the loudest crowd in Europe. So, yeah, Anfield on a European night. If you ever get to go to Anfield, I would just try and get in the Champions League games. I wouldn't bother with a Premier League game 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. If you're going once, it's got to be a European night.
Okay.
So. How many matches have you been to?
Two
matches. Two.
I've been to two, and they were both local. Sheffield Wednesday.
All right. I went to a Sheffield United on a dark February evening against Watford.
Right.
And I froze to death. Everything was grey. It was appalling. I think it was nil all. Can't remember the score.
Yeah.
And that was about the last time I went.
The first match I went to was free, because my dad was a bus driver for the football bus.
He drove the away team.
The away team.
Right.
And he drove them from the train station in the town centre straight to Sheffield Wednesday ground. Dropped them off, and then obviously waited outside. So instead of waiting outside, they actually invite you in. So I'm his second, and I went in with him.
It
was my first experience of a football match. I was about 11 or 12 year old, something like that. And I thought, I'm going back as an adult and see if I really did not enjoy it. And yeah, I found out I really didn't enjoy it the first time round, so I didn't go back again after that. The second time was enough for me, and it was a derby match against Sheffield United, and it didn't end as a football match, and more of a boxing match on that particular day.
Right.
So that put me off for football matches entirely.
I was brought up, you know, when football, hooliganism was big.
Yeah.
And I thought, to be honest, it was in the past. Except, and we talk about technology, what we talk about today. What did I watch yesterday? Or what popped up, I should say. I mean, I did watch it. It was a thing on YouTube or Twitter or something. I can't remember which one or two. And it was headlined, Liverpool fans enjoying themselves in advance of the Man City Charity Shield?
Yes.
That's what you mentioned.
Yeah.
And I said, well, this is interesting, or whatever. Just it popped up, and it was them having a fight.
Right.
On the tube. And there was it was grown adults looking, you know, reasonable looking guys, or, you know, people, and all blokes, of course.
Yeah.
Just sort of having these rather strange, what I would call fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit sort of half hearted, sort of, you know, they were hitting each other, but it wasn't going to kill them, you know, that sort of. But they were falling over, and people going to get hurt.
And that's what got me, because I thought, you know, this is a game that I've been and watched for a good hour and a half. I've come out now, and, you know, this fight's going off outside grounds. It's like, why?
I think it's, I think the frustration and the passion boils over. I think the passion for your team boils over then into frustration, and some men, sometimes women, they don't know how to argue.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a passionate supporter of Liverpool. I am a passionate supporter of football. I've done my coaching badge. I've done level one. I want to do level two. I've coached a team. I feel like I've got enough knowledge on the sport to offer an opinion. Now, some people would just disagree with my opinion, but instead of presenting an argument that I could then, or evidence that I could then go back with and we could have a conversation, it would just resort to, well, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm going to punch you until you decide otherwise.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like, well, okay, and what have we really achieved in that? You know, I happen to think, you know, Devok Origi on the left is a waste. You don't. Okay, cool, let's just agree to disagree and move on.
But can you imagine putting that principle into your personal or your business life? You know, if you walk into a business, you don't get the deal, for instance, but you know the partner who did get the deal, you go around to his and, you know what, sort that out.
Yeah.
It wouldn't actually exist in that world, but yet in a sport that there's no benefit to you or me, as such, we're finding that rivalry, and it's just...
This is it.
Baffles me.
Yeah, and I think it was it Bill, was it Bob Shankly that said... some people think football's a matter of life and death, but actually it's much more important than that.
Yeah.
and it is, because for that 90 minutes, I think a lot of individuals use football as escapism. We've heard about Raheem Sterling saying that he left London, and if he didn't get into football, he would be in crime.
Yeah.
I think that was the article that he wrote. And he gets a lot of bad press. Now, I don't like him because he left Liverpool. And it wasn't because he left Liverpool that I don't like him. It was the interview that he did before he left, where he said, I'm not motivated by money. And I think there was an 80 to 90, maybe even 100 grand a week deal on the table for him at Liverpool. And he signed for Man City for 165. Now, in hindsight, it's brilliant, because he went on and he's won the Premier League. He's gone on and won the FA Cup. He left to win titles and trophies, and he did. But it was the way that he left. But he gets a lot of bad press because he bought his mum a house. But there's another player at Man City, same age, called Phil Foden, who also bought his mum a house. And the way that the media portray them both is, young English kid Phil Foden bought his mum a house, isn't this so lovely that he's doing well and he's buying his mum. Raheem Sterling, how dare he buy his mum diamond encrusted bathrobes? Because right. He's seen as a money grabbing teenager. But again, football fans at that point would be, for 90 minutes, the point I was trying to make is that they escape. They escape their mundane Monday to Friday jobs. Okay. They go to the football. It's the only place that they can be themselves. And I think sometimes that then boils over into, you know, the racist chanting that we've seen.
Yeah.
Because you're in a crowd of 40 people. You know, in Anfield, I think the cop is 25,000. Mm. If you're stood, and I don't think it happens at Anfield. I think on the rare occasions it has, the football fans have been banned. But you can shout something, and nobody knows it was you, because there's so many people around and it's that loud. So they just escape. But then, unfortunately, it boils over to frustration on the tubes, and then they start fighting, and then it's, oh, look at the Liverpool fans again.
Yeah.
You know, there was the...
But this is the prestige. You've just said that, what you've just said about Foden and Sterling sounds like racism to me.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of...
Foden's a white kid from Manchester.
Yes.
He's homegrown, isn't he, I think?
He is, yeah.
Which, again, that brings another thing into it. You know, well, why have we got people from elsewhere playing for Manchester United or whatever it is? You know, I know people who would want football people to, you know, football clubs to have homegrown players only.
Yes.
A bit like Yorkshire cricket, you know, used to be, when you only could play for Yorkshire if you were born and bred in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
Now, that's obviously gone way out the corner now. Outside. But that's that Sterling... It's interesting. I heard that interview, and it was put over the fact that it was, you know, it just didn't sound sincere.
No, I think John Barnes was very critical. I think John Barnes came out and said,
was he?
The only reason that Raheem Sterling's getting bad publicity for doing the same thing as a white kid is because he's black. And it could be true. You know, it could be that he's perceived, you know, he's a young black footballer from London, and he's come out and he's done a really frank... You know, he should be applauded for the interview that he did. He came out and said, if I hadn't have been a footballer, I would have been in a gang. And with the amount of crime that's going on in London now, and the amount, you know, with the knife crime and the guns, you know, he's been really honest about it. But that's the thing. I think the truth in this country, with that used to being fed rubbish,
yeah.
that as soon as somebody comes out and speaks the truth, it's almost as though we've it's got dismissed. To ridicule them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How dare you speak the truth? Yeah. You know, that's offended me. That's upset me. That's hurt me. Well, not really.
So, right. But this is in the sort of, you know, you talk about the chanting.
Yeah.
I don't listen to lyrics, for example, on music, but I can never hear the chants. But they come about within seconds of things happening, don't they? They respond. Yeah. So how do you get 25,000 people suddenly coming up with a chant?
I think the chants are already they pre-exist, and I just you know, with most things, it's a case of you're watching the game. You know, a decision at the Rovers on Saturday went against the Rovers, and within seconds, the South Stand was singing, you know, shouting some swear words at the referee.
And what were they?
I'll not repeat unless you can leave them out.
edit that part.
But yeah, so it's that point. It's within seconds, the crowd unite. And it's
turned automatically.
All against that person.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, again, he was gloating when he did it, but Raheem Sterling went over to the Liverpool fans on Sunday and he was speaking to a lady. There was three lads that he was speaking to. And the whole time he was there, he was being booed. He'd gone across to give his shirt to a young girl or a yeah. young lad, and he was just being booed the entire time he was there. And you think, well, that's got to take some courage, because, you know, I tried to do stand-up once and I was booed after my second joke, and I think I got to about five and then I left the stage because I thought, I can't handle this. This yeah. is, you know, you're supposed to be laughing at me. And if you're not laughing at me, you're not laughing with me, at least laugh, you know, just laugh at the times and just give me a round of applause at the end and don't destroy me. But I'll not do that again.
That's when I found out I didn't like tomatoes after they were thrown at me. I just decided enough's enough. You know?
Yeah.
So you've tried stand-up as well?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah, many years ago, yeah. It was it's like a Britain's Got Talent kind of event for charity, and I had exactly the same moment on stage and started telling jokes, and I wasn't even booed. I was thrown at, to be honest. More booed, so yeah. It wasn't anything too harsh. It was like sponge balls. If you didn't like the act, you throw a sponge ball at them.
Well, that's kind of a bit like premeditated in that sense. Your chants already, they're 90% there. Just attach a name to it.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, they're obviously armed with sponges.
Exactly, yeah. It was right before
you
even started.
You walked into the cauldron there, didn't you?
I kind of think that everyone got sponged, which is a benefit.
I think the ironic
really.
Thing for you is that you brought the sponges, so you must have known.
How do you know? Were you there? It was you with Rome.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, that's I don't think I've ever sat in a kind of conversation where two people have admitted to having a go at stand-up.
Yeah, it's not what I do again.
They did something recently with some friends of mine. They ostensibly the eccentric or egomaniacs thought idea they would come and have a go.
Yeah,
and then realised their egos were shrunk to nothing. You know, when they cocked up their jokes and they dried up, and people just, as you say, just sit there and I'll respond.
Exactly. Think, oh my mine was stage fright through. I got to a joke, told the punchline, and it'd be like a pause, and the next joke. I was just really nervous of doing this whole thing. There weren't even big crowds.
Did you volunteer though? I mean, how did you get to be doing it?
Because I was the helper on the night, and one of the acts actually backed off and let him down. So I got thrown in the deep end and said, right, you're on. What are you going to do? What? No, in fact, I can't sing, and that would just not go down well at all. So I just decided to try and tell a few jokes, just things I'd heard on from either my dad or from friends or whatever, not jokes and things. And yeah, it didn't go down too well.
So randomly, crikey.
Yeah, yeah. On you go. There's 100 people out there that's going to throw things at me. You want me to go on? Fantastic. I'll be about 30 seconds.
Wait, but I suppose that
start the car.
Does that not help? That probably helps now in networking events like this, where you're going to have to stand up for 60 to 2 minutes, pitch a little bit about you. Knowing that we don't have sponge balls or tomatoes to throw at you.
Yeah,
and at the end you're going to get a round of
eggs,
applause.
Bacon and bread. It's not looking promising, this is always it.
Scrambled eggs makes a big mess.
It's got to be the opposite way, you know, these tomatoes. Yeah.
But that standing in front of 100 people and, you know, being subjected to that
must
mean that standing in front of 12 supporting people.
Yeah, makes I mean, networking is completely a different ballgame. When I first started, I was nervous as anyone else. In networking, just stand up and I'm Phil Morton, your hands start to, you start sweating, your palms get really sweaty. It's like, oh, do I talk about it exactly? But when you've done it so many times,
yeah,
you think, you know what, I actually know what I'm talking about. I can actually project that to people and they'll understand me and talk to me about it. That's fantastic. I think there's a bit of a difference between trying to impress a crowd and getting to follow you and your jokes compared to actually talking about a business proposition or what it can bring to the table.
I suppose, but at the same time, when you went to do your telling of jokes, you were standing in for somebody, so zero prep.
Yeah.
You know, if you did it again, you'd possibly, you know, think, right, I've got 5 minutes. What are the funniest jokes I've heard recently? A 4-year-old told me a joke the other day, which will definitely go in if I go and do another stand-up, which was, why was there a tortilla wrap on a radiator? It's fajitas.
Oh,
I just thought, you're 4 year old, you know.
Has anybody said that maybe that's why you're not going to do stand up? You
know, you can.
There's
only two of us here.
We're not impressed.
I just thought that was brilliant.
Obviously, that sort of humour, you know, where it's not got any sort of innuendo or racist overtones or all that sort of stuff,
yeah,
it's quite appealing. Yeah. I was one of the things I was going to talk about in here, in terms of. When we're talking about presenting. If you're doing it on a regular basis, now Phil and I have seen each other, it must be dozens of times
now.
Yeah,
definitely.
So you have to change your pitch. I think you do.
Yeah.
And there's one person in here today who didn't, and I've heard it 3 or 4 times, exactly the same thing. And to be honest, my first question was, why hasn't he got it wrote? Why does he have to read it still?
Yeah, exactly.
If he does it every time, he should be, you know, animating it, as in acting, you know, whatever, and knowing his words.
Yeah.
He was still reading it. And it was the same thing that I've heard. I mean, I can't have been, you know, it must have been plenty of other people have seen him more than I have. But it was just that spontaneity. Now, I want to change things. I feel as if you have to change, you know, which is kind of what I did today. But it puts you under pressure.
Yeah.
I've never been able to tell jokes because my best mate, or one of my best mates, was always the life and soul of the party, and he always told the jokes.
Yeah.
So whenever you told a joke, it didn't in any way...
yeah, tumbleweed.
Hit his mark, and he always got massive laughs, and you got nothing.
Yeah,
you know, you think, oh, wait a minute, what did I do wrong? I've said the same joke.
Yeah,
but with one of the things we were talking about, the kids, you know, the unfiltered sort of approach to the world.
Yeah,
and there was that one. Was it maybe with you? I can't remember. It was I was into the education idea and kids talking about what they do, and they're giving them the opportunity to be creative.
Yeah.
Say, right, draw something. And this kid apparently went round and says, oh, what are you drawing? And he says, oh, I'm drawing Jesus. And he said, what? Oh, nobody knows what Jesus looks like. And the kid just said, well, in a minute he will. so it's a great, now that came directly, Simon, I just realised, Simon in the depot.
Yeah.
He was inspired by the guy who relayed that story.
Right.
Who was inspired to say it about kids unfiltered. So these things, you know, before you know it,
yeah,
that's not going to come off in podcasts, is it?
No.
For
the benefit
expansive,
of the tape. Yeah. You know, it moves out.
Yeah, it's kind of like a ripple on water, isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
I find with comedians now is very similar to what we said in networking this morning. They're telling stories.
Yeah.
You know, old comedians and new faces was about telling the joke and the punchline, not necessarily a story. A lot of comedians seem to have forgot that part now. There's a lot of one-liners out there, like Tim Vine will do a one-liner joke. Brilliant. But the comedians are telling more and more stories.
Do you know what? I agree. So Mock the Week on BBC Two has a guy. There's Milton Jones, there's Stuart Francis,
yeah,
there's Tim Vine. He's in Not Going Out, isn't he?
With that's right, yeah.
The one-liners, they're going out of fashion.
You're thinking of Lee Mack.
Yeah, but Tim Vine was also in that.
Lee Mack and...
Tim Vine was in it as well, he was Lee Mack's
brother-in-law.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Was he? Well, I've obviously come in the end of the...
Is it Hugh Laurie now that's in it with Lee Mack?
Hugh Laurie's in it.
Yeah.
I must have missed the first series.
Yeah, the first series was Tim Vine, Lee Mack, Miranda Hart was in that
Miranda
as well.
Miranda Hart, yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Right,
so when you see these comedians doing the one-liners, you get the same reaction as what you two just gave with the fajitas joke.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like...
You wait for that punchline.
You're waiting for the punchline every time, whereas comedians such as Kevin Bridges and Dara O'Brien can go 12-15 minutes telling you a story, and you just you're just hooked, and you're waiting for the punchline at the end, and it doesn't arrive. But then the best thing about Dara Breen is that he will do 10 or 15 sort of stories, and then pick on the crowd, and you think, oh, he's picking on the crowd, he's going to, you know, rinse them, or he's going to upset them. And what he does is at the end he links it all together and makes the people that he spoke to in the crowd heroes.
He's a very intelligent man, isn't he? He's a really intelligent man.
Yeah, I think he's got a degree in mathematics, hasn't he?
Yeah.
A master's in mathematics.
He fronts up all his astronomy.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. With Brian Cox, isn't he?
Yes.
They do a thing like that. Yeah, I think these guys are obviously bright. And that, you know, they know their stuff. But their storytelling, there's always the kick in, which is you've picked up on the same thing, is that 15 minutes later, you're reminded of what he said 15 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it brings the whole thing together. It's clever,
and you kind of remember it, because the thing with a Stuart Francis or with a Milton Jones is it's that quick.
Yeah,
they will tell nearly 1,000 jokes a night, and you'll think, what was the one that he said about the boomerang, or no, that other one about the rowing, and he remembers swimming back to shore and he can't remember why, or he's playing golf with his dad, I can't remember it, and it's, I can remember, but do you know what I mean? But then with a Dara Breen story, he tells one about playing video games and how, you know, and he talks about the video games that I played when I was a kid, Metal Gear Solid with Snake, and he talks about one where he's pressing all the buttons and he's doing jump, job, crouch, and you get a match report at the end of it, and he's doing jump, job, crouch next to this thing, and then he's tapping the box, and then he's going down, and then he's looking up in the air, then he's looking, and it's just, you've probably never played the game, which is why you're not laughing, but I've been there doing that, going, I cannot get on this ledge, I do not know how to do it. And the internet didn't exist when I was playing this game in 97. Well, it did, but it was dial up, and you know, you couldn't block the house phone for longer than 10 minutes, and that's how long it took to load a web page.
Did you whistle a lot?
Oh, I did that. Ding, 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 ding.
Dial
up AOL.
Yeah. But you call your enemy by whistling, don't you?
Yeah.
You sit in the side of a wall. Turn on, look at you, and then you're going to try and beat him up behind him, knowing you're there.
Oh, you're talking about the game now?
Yeah, it's just.
Oh, right.
It's a good game, but yeah, it's one you've got to work out again. You've got to really put yourself in that situation of being a silent assassin. Yeah, it's a good game.
Which
game is
that?
Metal Gear Solid.
I'm currently playing the Phantom. I think it's called the Phantom. I can't remember what it's called. It's the fifth one, anyway.
I'm playing Splinter Cell.
They're good if you've got patience, and I'm more of a Call of Duty where you run around a corner and you try and shoot the person before they shoot you, and then you die, and then 5 seconds later you respawn and you play again.
Yeah.
Whereas with Metal Gear Solid, you go back to the beginning of the mission and you have to start crawling through stuff. It's just patience.
I die in real life, I'm dead. The game just seems to come back to life. It's bizarre. You know, there's no game that actually just finishes because he's dead. You know,
yeah, he was the worst field agent we ever saw. He died 97 times.
Yeah.
But he managed. And he was on a stealth mission.
He managed it through the level.
Yeah.
Level 1.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
Get to the end of level 1. Start of level 2. No!
Read the manual inside. 42 levels later. 42!
Yeah, this one's got something like 70.
Yeah,
it's in chapters. Crazy. Chapter 1 was 28 missions.
You won't be able to skip the story in between.
No, you have to
sit
through.
That doesn't work through the story. You can just sit through the next 15 minutes of your life. You'll never get back.
I go and make a coffee. Are they still talking? Yeah. I'll make another one.
What are we doing this mission? I don't know. Can we rewind it? No.
Gaming is. It's not something I've ever been into. We've got some of the networking people here. They're playing board games now. Going back.
They are making a resurgence.
And they're making a resurgence. Yeah. Something because the gaming has got sort of strategy and things like that. But it's more more personal. Now, I understand you. I mean, gaming, there's people who get into it. But that, you know, that story about the kid that won $1 million recently, wasn't that?
Yes.
Yeah, Fortnite. That's right. And he bought his mum a house.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, there. He's good.
Yeah.
But I can understand why. So the one thing that I would say about gaming is it's a very lonely, isolated experience, because unless you've got a headset and you're communicating with somebody else, and I'm trying to teach myself German, so when there's a German on Call of Duty, I'll sort of try and talk. But I think the problem with the World Wide Web and anti-social media, as I call it, is that the purpose of it was to connect us all and be able to talk and you know, be able to show somebody that lives or has moved away in, you know, New Zealand or wherever, what you're doing in England. But it made us looking to our phones a lot and not want to interact with somebody else. So I think board games are coming back, because you're right, it's that case of, I'm going to sit here and play a game of chess, sat opposite you, and we're going to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Without my phone. I might have to look at my phone a couple of times to work out whether or not to do, you know, rook to b6.
You mean cheat?
Yeah, cheat.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, because I'm good at beating a computer at chess, but not a human that can think for itself. Because I can set the yeah. computer to easy.
Yes. Yeah. I found that level.
And I'll always be white so that I can go first.
Yeah.
Is that the way around?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think there's a there is that sort of I think a lot of people are not embracing social media and wanted to come away from it for that. Sat opposite each other, let's play a game of Connect Four.
And I've tried that with my youngest kids, which are 11 and 12. We tried playing Scrabble, and they're putting LOL. And I was thinking, this is not a word. It is actually a word in the dictionary.
Well, LOL is actually not an official word.
LOL is not an official word in the dictionary.
Despite the fact that Cameron didn't know what it meant.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm playing Scrabble with my kids and saying, no, that's not a real word. And he's actually got a dictionary. Yes, Dad, it actually is a real word.
It's not scoring you many points, but it is a word.
Yeah, it's the only two letters he had left was O and L. So he put LOL.
LOL.
Well, it kind of, but that's, in a sense, is bringing, you know, the two discipline or two worlds together, which is, you know, a good idea, I thought. You know, so you're aware of Scrabble,
exactly,
wordplay, yeah. And LOL, yeah, is a word. Maybe if you don't use it, but that doesn't mean it isn't, is it? That's when, and the, you know, you question some of the, I think I've questioned the Oxford English Dictionary coming up with modern words. You know, they put them into the, you know, the, and every year they add words to it and things like that.
Now Brexit will be in there, I'm sure.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Sure, yeah.
A word that's just, and I'll show some ignorance here, but it just seems to have come out of nowhere. Rhetoric.
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 Rhetoric is a word.
So it just appears that this word, until, and I'll skirt straight over this, but until Boris came into power, I've never heard that word. And now all of a sudden,
it's there.
It's just constantly.
We've never heard of rhetoric. Oh, right.
Never.
Oh, I see. Either. Well, this is the press. This is the large broadsheets, looking, you know, writing journalism, you know, and writing what you might call good journalism, which includes big words.
Big words.
And not just pictures or something. And but Boris comes from a very traditional background, isn't he? He literally was brought up on Latin, as the old joke, you know, all that sort of stuff.
I brought up on Countdown, that's me done.
Countdown, yeah, well, so, but how does, you know, you argue with him, you know, what has he done, what's his appeal, if...
Yeah.
Why are people voting for him, or will they vote for him? That's another point. I don't know.
I'd like some of Boris's policies. I don't agree with all of them.
It wasn't you that was going to bring Boris up, was it?
No.
Oh, right, no, it's okay.
It was me, and I said, let's go straight, because obviously if we get into the politics, it's a bit like football, isn't it? It's a case of... Well,
I'm going to...
let's just...
We should leave Boris for another day, because this is already over half an hour.
Okay.
Next, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah. So great, and I will put it now, this is the famous bit, I'm going to shut it off now, and we will stop.